Good afternoon. This is Carol Bond with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated October 25th, 2016. The front page of the newspaper, at least in the e-edition, is remarkable. All it does is have the name of the newspaper, Herald and Review, and the date, and in large capital letters, it says, "Finally." And there's a single picture, which is of a Cubs player standing in the middle of Wrigley Field with his arms upstretched and his mouth open. You can tell he's shouting with excitement. And then there's a tiny little article that says, "World Series trophy next on Cubs list." Since this is front page news, we're going to go ahead and read a sports article. It was written by a Lee News Service writer. "A day that many Chicago Cubs fans feared they might never see has finally arrived. Their beloved boys in blue have finally made it to baseball's biggest stage. After posting the best regular season record and dispatching the San Francisco Giants and the Los Angeles Dodgers, the Cubs are in the World Series for the first time since 1945. Now, all that separates the North Siders from their first championship since 1908 are four more wins against the Cleveland Indians, the team with baseball's second longest title drought, dating to 1948. Game one is tonight at Cleveland's Progressive Field. Wrigley Field hosts its first World Series game in 71 years on Friday. Cubs fans are eager to see their team wipe away painful memories from previous close calls. A fall from first in 1969, playoff disappointments in 1989, 2007, and 2008, stunning exits in 1984 and 2003. The Indians are looking to give Cleveland its second championship in less than a year after the Cavaliers won the NBA Finals to end their city's long run of championship futility." On page two, we find more articles about the World Series with the headlines "Dueling Droughts" and quite a few statistics. The real or the usual front page is on page A3, and we'll turn there now. The main article on page 3 has this headline, "Nearing the Home Stretch. Local political parties double efforts as November 8th finish line draws close." This was written by Ryan Voiles. "The political game of chess has been set in Macon County as both parties finish off recruiting and putting their pieces in place. They now set off to claim a checkmate come November 9th. Efforts are underway from both the Macon County Democratic and Republican parties to round up the base, stir up enthusiasm, and do whatever they can do to get community members out to vote. For weeks now, both parties have done what they can to prepare themselves for the rush that is Election Day on November 8th, which includes strengthening their volunteer base to do community outreach. Quote, "We're walking the county, signing people up to vote, and doing whatever we can to encourage people to early vote," said Nick Roberson, campaign manager for the Macon County Democratic Party. To do that, parties lean on many of their usual suspects, including those who have spent decades volunteering on local campaigns. And volunteering often includes long days, little rest, and living and breathing the campaign until election day, all without pay. For Macon County Republicans, Chairman Bruce Pillsbury, he said the volunteers see the hard work as a sense of duty. Quote, "Our volunteers are working for principles and beliefs in electing conservative candidates," he said. Aside from sending volunteers to walk the county, both parties have been training poll watchers to help ensure there is no sort of suspicious activity or fraud attempt at any polls at 72 precincts in the county. Neither side expects to take many breaks in the time leading up to the election, especially in a year with an especially heated presidential race. One issue that both parties have been stressing extensively is for voters to vote down ballot, which can be an issue in presidential years when local candidates are less known to the public. In Macon County, that issue is more prevalent as there is a notable lack of contests in both Illinois House races, as Representative Sue Scherer is unopposed and Representative Bill Mitchell is up against Christine Law, a Democrat who has not done any campaigning or fundraising. The race in the 13th Congressional District, which sees Congressman Rodney Davis face off against former Macon County Board member Mark Wicklund, is considerably more low-key than the past two campaigns, and neither candidate has run ads or sent flyers. Aside from the presidential race and the ones for U.S. Senate and Illinois Comptroller, the most competitive races for Macon County voters is at the one for state's attorney, circuit clerk, and various Macon County board districts. A key for the campaigns is to get voters as educated as they can about local candidates and realize how much of an impact they have on the community, Roberson said. We've been trying to stress there's so much more at stake than the presidential race, he said. We really are trying to stress those down-ballot races. That concern, while difficult to calculate, does not seem to be coming to fruition during early voting, said Macon County Clerk Steve Bean. Thanks to new elective technology brought in over the past, election technology brought in over the past month, machines will now only kick ballots out if residents do not vote in the Illinois Comptroller race. So far, that has not been an issue. Quote, I think that gives us a reflection that people are going and voting down the ticket, Bean said. As of Sunday night, Bean said his office has processed 4,150 ballots from early voting, grace period, and mailed-in absentee voting, 1,387 more ballots than were collected at this time 2 years ago. As they approach the home stretch, every waking moment will be dedicated to finishing the job that started months ago. Quote, it all comes down to this. We just have to make sure we can educate whomever we can and get our voters to the booth where they'll hopefully vote Republican, Pillsbury said. Those who want to volunteer can call the Macon County Republicans at 217-330-8290 or the Macon County Democrats at 217-330-6629. They can also visit the headquarters in person with the Democrats at 1671 West King Street and the Republicans at 231 North Main Street. There are three or four photos with this article. The first shows volunteer Tom Grianaeus, who is printing out a survey chart while working at the Macon County Republican headquarters on Friday. The walls are adorned with American flags and various kinds of red, white, and blue decorations. There's also a photo of campaign coordinator Nick Roberson checking on a volunteer over the phone while working at the Macon County Democrat headquarters. You can see, of course, a lot of Democrat publicity in the background. Another photograph shows Richland Community College students Cassie McClary and Jared Anderson sitting at booths. They're doing poll work on phones at the Macon County Republican headquarters. Also on the Real front page, we find this article from Crime and the Courts written by Huey Freeman. The headline is, Snyder Gets Two Life Terms. Kelton Snyder, a 24-year-old Decatur man, was facing an automatic sentence of life in prison after he was convicted by a federal jury in April of one count of conspiring to kill a witness. But after arguments by attorneys Monday showed that there was a chance of appeal of that conviction, U.S. District Judge Colin S. Bruce pronounced a sentence which could invalidate that appeal if successful. In addition to the life sentence Bruce handed down for Snyder's role in the shooting death of 19-year-old Paige Mars, he also pronounced a sentence of life in prison for a different count, brandishing a firearm during a violent crime. Snyder previously pleaded guilty to that count, which had sentencing guidelines of 7 years to life in prison. The two life sentences are to be served consecutively. Paige Mars was shot to death after she acted as the getaway driver in the robbery, which took place at the Circle K gas station, 1685 South Baltimore Avenue, on April 3, 2015. 2 days later, she was shot to death after Snyder conspired to take Mars' life. Snyder's alleged co-conspirator, Matthew Higgins Vogt, also 24, confessed to police that he shot the teenager, quote, to keep her quiet, according to a probable cause affidavit filed in Macon County Circuit Court. Mars was killed in a wooded area near the Sangamon River, just south of Greenwood Cemetery. Higgins Vogt has entered a not guilty plea and is awaiting trial in the Macon County Jail on state charges of first-degree murder and armed robbery. One of the most unusual aspects of this homicide was that although Mars was involved in the robbery which led to her death, she had no known prior involvement with any kind of criminal activity. Decatur Police Detective David Daly testified at the sentencing hearing that the only mention of her in the police database was as a homicide victim. Ironically, Mars had decided to possibly pursue a career in law enforcement shortly before her death. Mars met Snyder a few days or so before the robbery. They had a brief romantic involvement, but she was warned about him beating up other women and told him so. He was enraged with her negative messages and apparently believed she would betray him to the police. Sherry Semelka, Mars's aunt, delivered a victim impact statement on behalf of the family, standing at a podium to the left of the prosecutor's table, facing the judge. Several other family members were seated behind her in the gallery. Quote, "She had a smile that lit up the room, the laugh of a carefree child, and she loved her family and friends unconditionally," Semelka told the court, adding she was just beginning to find her way in the world. Quote, "She had just earned her GED, obtained a driver's license, found a job, and expressed interest in pursuing a degree in law enforcement." Semelka said that because of Snyder's selfish decision, they could not even have a funeral with an open casket in which to say goodbye to her. She was severely disfigured by the execution-style shooting. Quote, "The day we were notified of Paige's murder, all of our lives were affected forever," Semelka said, adding that their lives have been, quote, "horrible since that day, filled with grief." Quote, "Paige will never celebrate her college graduation, marry a man she loves, experience the miracle of the birth of her children, or enjoy the experience of raising a family," her aunt said. Quote, "We mourn the loss of the people we used to be. We no longer feel true joy," she said. "We avoid social situations because it is too hard to suppress our true emotions." Snyder ruined the lives of many people with his reckless decisions, she said. Quote, "We know that this conviction will not bring Paige back to us, but we will rest a little easier knowing that her murderer will be living out the rest of his life behind bars and will not be free to victimize anyone else," Semelka said. After the lead prosecutor, Assistant U.S. Attorney Jason Boehm, argued for life in prison on the firearm brandishing count, Assistant U.S. Public Defender Elizabeth Pollock responded that this count was in relation to a robbery that netted $700 and some liquor. Quote, "Asking for a life sentence for carrying a gun during an armed robbery is different from carrying a gun and using it during a murder," Pollock said. She said Snyder did not commit the murder, and yet he is in federal court, while Higgins Vogt is facing charges in state court. Quote, "It always confused me how death or life in prison could be appropriate for someone who didn't kill someone," she said. Pollock argued that Snyder, who was abandoned to live on the streets as a child, had mental health problems and was beaten by his mother's boyfriends, should have a chance to live outside of prison again. She argued that even if the court awarded 37 years on the three non-murder counts, he might have a chance to breathe fresh air again. Quote, "He has rehabilitative potential," Pollock said. Pollack repeatedly argued that Snyder should never have been tried for murder in federal court, which would be the argument to be presented on appeal. But Bruce said the murder was, quote, part of one common scheme or plan, and the gun itself was related to the robbery. The robbery was charged as a federal crime for interference with commerce. Snyder did not make a statement in his own behalf, nor had he testified at his trial. However, he interrupted the judge with an outburst during a discussion early in the hearing. Quote, "What went on Sunday didn't have anything to do with what happened on expletive Friday," Snyder yelled from the seat at the defense table before his lawyer calmed him down. The judge noted before pronouncing his sentence that Snyder was a dangerously violent person with no self-control. Quote, "If released, there is a likelihood someone would be killed," Bruce said. Quote, "In the Bureau of Prisons, he is a risk to any other inmate." Turning the page again, we find one more article about the Cubs. The headline here is "Cubs Gear, a Hot Commodity." Local stores report that team merchandise is selling quickly. This was written by Chris Lusvardi, and the dateline is Forsyth. Merchandise to mark the Chicago Cubs' historic run to the World Series has been a top seller at MC Sports and other stores at Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth. Hundreds of shoppers went into the store Sunday, hoping to find new shirts, sales associate Tyler Kirby said. Quote, "We didn't have them out of the boxes," Kirby said. "They were buying up the shirts." Kirby said it could just be a sign of what's to come should the Cubs continue this year's winning ways. The store is trying to keep up with demand by getting in new shipments as fast as possible, he said. Quote, "I expected everyone to go nuts," Kirby said. "It's been 71 years. This certainly doesn't happen every day." The Cubs will be in the World Series for the first time since 1945, while trying to win its first championship since 1908, when Game 1 gets underway at 7 p.m. today in Cleveland. In addition to those coming into the store, Kirby said the phone was ringing with questions about what types of items are available. Loretta Ritchie of Mount Zion was wearing a new Cubs shirt as she shopped Monday morning to look for gifts and possibly make an exchange for different sizes of shirts. Ritchie was hanging on to what she had bought until she found the right size. The Cubs clinching the World Series berth Saturday evening set off a celebration for Ritchie, age 70, who has been waiting for that moment. Quote, "I was elated," she said. "We were outside with air horns and flying the winner flags, cheering and singing. It was an awesome feeling." It was a feeling as a Cubs fan she hasn't had the opportunity to enjoy before now. Quote, "You hold yourself in reserve," Ritchie said. "I've learned to be a good loser." Even some Cardinal fans seemed happy to see the Cubs finally be in a winning position. Billy Howell of Decatur was buying shirts to send to her sons who live out of state. Howell said she doubted, as avid Cub fans, they would return the favor for her, but she enjoyed doing it for them. Quote, "One of them had his wife mad because he woke the baby up," Howell said. I want them to go all the way. I'm hoping they win. This could be the year. Large color photograph has line under it. Associate Manager Randy Rhodes works on a display in the Chicago Cubs section of the MC Sporting Goods store in the Hickory Point Mall, Forsyth. He's straightening t-shirts on a table, and you can see the store behind him, and just about as far as you can see are Cub t-shirts and sweatshirts and hoodies of mostly dark blue color with a few white and a few gray sprinkled in. We turn to the briefs section on the same page. Robbery averted. Police are hunting a hooded robber who accosted a Decatur woman Sunday night and threatened her with a handgun. Written reports say the 20-year-old victim had just got out of her car in the 1100 block of South Silas Street at 8:50 p.m. on the way to visit a friend when she was confronted by the robber. He pointed a silver and black handgun at her and used foul language to demand money from the woman, who reacted by turning and fleeing. She dashed inside the friend's house and slammed and locked the door while yelling for the police to be called. He is described as a black male in his mid-20s, 6 feet tall, wearing a black sweatshirt and dark colored jeans. Next, motorcyclist injured. A crash between a school bus and a motorcycle in Clark County ended with the motorcycle rider being taken to the hospital on Sunday evening, according to the Illinois State Police. Jacqueline Collett, 69, of Charleston, was driving a yellow school bus south on Illinois Route 49 and attempting a left-hand turn on the Interstate 70 eastbound entrance ramp in Casey, pulled in front of 65-year-old Stephen Huckaba of Martinsville, who was driving a blue Harley-Davidson motorcycle. Huckaba was unable to avoid the collision and was lifelined from the scene to Carl Hospital in Champaign for non-life-threatening injuries. Collett was charged with failure to yield, turning left. The Decatur-Macon County Senior Center will be conducting the Longaberger Bingo fundraiser, one of the year's major benefits, from 2 to 5 p.m. Sunday, October 30th at the center, 1430 North 22nd Street. Longaberger Bingo is based on bingo, with various Longaberger baskets as prizes. Admission is $20 for 15 games and door prizes, silent auction, 50-50 drawing, and prize raffle. The event is open to the public, and all proceeds benefit the Senior Center. Donations of baked goods to sell will be appreciated. A small photograph at the bottom of a page with no article has this caption: Rob Reinhold practices tricks. He's on a skateboard at the Fairview Skate Park Monday. The nice weather was part of Reinhold's motivation for going to the park to work on his skating skills. The young man is airborne as the photo is snapped. This is Carol Bond with the October 25th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review. We'll take a short break now and return for the second part of our reading. Please stay tuned.